What's happening? It's Contrast Uncut, Season 2, Episode 35. Man, I got to first shout out to my sponsors, man. Bobby D Presents and Uncle Snoop's Army. I would not be able to do this without y'all. Thank you, brothers. Man, it's your host, Zylo, a.k.a. DJ $1, like I won some money. I got a very, very special guest. I got me one of those jack-of-all-trades. I mean, he's a marketing guru. He is a producer that loves music. And he understands these clothing lines. I mean, he's just spread all the way across the board with the culture. I mean, I'm talking about someone as the president of Vertical Agency that represents SOBRBE, OMB Peasy, Reggae Band, Extendables, I mean, G Perico. I mean, major clothing lines like Pink Dolphin, ABC Schoolwear, Patel's and Peacocks and Cookies. I mean, the guy is just all over the place. I mean, he made some of my favorite artists you've worked with, brother. I mean, you know, I grew up in Cali, so I got to give a lot of love because he produced a Burner, Andre Nicotina, Stallion, Messi, when Messi was really up there, Filthy, Fashawn, I mean, Mr. Fab, Los Rockas. I mean, the list just keeps on going.
I appreciate it, man. Thank you for having me, bro.
Man, I got Nima Fadavi in the building. What's happening, brother?
Yes, sir. How you doing, bro?
Can't complain, bro. Man, you had probably one of the longest intros I've had, and I've had some pretty good people on the show.
That's what's up, man. I appreciate you for having me. Thank you.
Yes, sir. No, bro, it's an honor. It's an honor because, you know, that puts the whole idea and the theory of this man has 24 hours in a day, and he's really utilizing 20 of those hours to make the most of all across the board. He's probably doing the other 4 hours of sleep.
That's what's up, man. Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
So I got a quote, brother, and you know, let me know how this relates to you. And if it doesn't relate to you, it's all good. It's Contrast Uncut. Every man got a right to decide his own destiny. By Marley.
I love it. I love it. Yeah, I mean that definitely relates to me. I think, you know, just in the field that I work in, as far as doing marketing and helping artists out and helping a lot of streetwear companies out. You know, you control your destiny, and we, you know, we work a lot in the independent space, as far as cutting out the middleman. We are, you know, we are the marketing team that helps people out. We aren't, you know, the big corporation that has, you know, that's getting backed by some major funding or, you know, things like that. So I think the ability for us to be able to not only control our own destiny as far as helping people out, but the ability to help other people out that are in the same exact position that they're controlling their own destiny as well.
I mean, you guys have a winning formula, I must admit. Because, I mean, if you think about everything you guys touch has evolved into something greater. And that's the beauty of seeing, you know, someone like yourself, a peeler of this whole, you know, success of the culture, especially coming from the Bay Area. Like, Bay Area gets slept on for so much, and then, you know, they don't even realize that they're rocking or supporting the Bay because of what they have on or what they're listening to, because that producer's from the Bay, but he's on Dave East's album, or, you know, all the way across the board. And so I got to make sure I take my hat off to you in the beginning of this show, because you really put on for the Bay Area. You really represent the West Coast like a champ, man.
I appreciate it. Thank you, man. You know, I was, you know, I was raised in the Bay Area, so you know, it's only right. I just grew up around the game, grew up around the culture. You know, it's only right to represent where I'm from.
So let me ask you this: did the game choose you, or did you choose the game?
I think it's a little bit of both.
So tell
I think
me
it's
why.
Definitely a little bit of both. I mean, I think. You know, I think growing up in the Bay Area, just in general, the game will choose you, period. You know, when you grow up out here. But then, you know, to really choose the game, you got to really fall in love with it and appreciate it. And, you know, love the hustle, love everything about it. Love the journey and the process, I think, is the most important thing. It's not always about getting to that, you know, getting into a certain ending point, but more so just really, really enjoying the process, because as you go along the journey and as you go along the process, things change, and you know that goal, that end goal might change, or you might achieve that end goal faster than you think, and then you have to set another goal and it goes on to the next thing. And so really really loving the game is part of it. And if you don't really love the game, then what are you doing it for,
man? It's not for you. And you know, you brought up a very great point. You got to love the process. Because, you know,
yeah, absolutely.
From point A to point B, it's all about plan A. Plan B supports plan A. Plan C is listen to plan A and B because it's all about plan A. And, you know, you keep on evolving these goals. You keep on having greater envisions. You know, you walk by faith, not by sight. And you know what you get? You get a huge, huge amount of accomplishments.
Yeah, absolutely. I think, again, it's just part of appreciating the journey and the process. And, you know, everything else just kind of falls in place once you really, really enjoy that process and really, you know, love doing that. I think that's one of the most important things.
When do you feel like the age where it was like, you know what, producing's for me? I didn't even bring in there that, you know, you're a high-end jeweler. I've seen some of the stuff you've been involved in.
So I think the thing for me has always been just to not put creativity in a box, right? So, you know, for me, I was, you know, my journey started with, you know, being 16 years old and starting to produce and, you know, DJ and work with different artists and just growing that. And I just wanted to produce and DJ, and that's all I wanted to do. And I did that for, you know, at least 10 years before starting going into other avenues. And at a certain point, it wasn't necessarily that I was getting bored, but, you know, I'm just a creative person. So I wanted to, you know, hey, you know, why not design jewelry? Why not pick up a camera and take photos? Why not come up with, you know, creative marketing ideas and things like that? So just being involved with the culture from a very creative standpoint, I just evolved and grew as a person. So, you know, from about 16 to, I would say, about like 20, 28 or so, all I did was produce and DJ. And then I started looking at different things and wanting to be creative in different outlets. And that's been my whole thing from the very beginning is, you know, being creative doesn't, don't put being creative in a box. You know, I look up to people like Pharrell, even people that are, you know, in our region that are, I feel like very underappreciated and under, you know, they don't get the credit that they deserve. People like Earth the Jerk, who was a very dope artist. Actually, I'm sorry, is a very dope artist when it comes to making music, but then also picked up a camera. Seeing people like that are, you know, multidimensional in their creativity and showing that it's okay to do that. You don't have to be put in a box. I think was very, very important to see at a young age and just knowing that was okay. So as I just grew into, you know, making music and being around the people that I was around who inspired me, you know, I said, you know, I had some ideas for jewelry. So I created a jewelry brand, which unfortunately is no longer around because I moved on to other things. But there was a period where that was a big focus. And then from there, moved on to photography. And then from there, moved on to marketing. So trying to just be creative in as many ways as I can that's fun and enjoyable.
And see, you know, you brought up some very key elements that you had to keep on transitioning. You wanted to keep on reinventing yourself. Like, mm-hmm. At the end of the day, you have to break the rules in order to have some real progress. And, you know, you had to break the rules of being a producer and staying in that box of, you know, I'm doing all these different sounds. I'm really messing with everyone across the map to a degree. I mean, mm-hmm. and you take that and you're like, you know what? This is great, but I want more. And, you know, you had to break the rules again. You're like, let's see, let me get into the jewelry. And then it's just amazing how you kept on developing it because, you know, you had to take pictures of your jewelry. You had to really sell it. And I can imagine the same way how to having to sell your beats and having to do that marketing aspect. It really developed you as a person into understanding marketing. And that's what marketing guru that you are. It developed and developed because you're a go-to guy. You know, you had your track record.
I appreciate it, man. Yeah, I think one of the things for me always was, you know, I was, you know, I was heavy on the hip hop side of things. So a lot of the artists that I was working with, I was producing for them, DJing for them, and then I was always just the computer nerd homie too, that you know, could talk to the street dudes. You know what I'm saying? So with that, like, I was able to teach myself marketing, you know, from my early 20s, which is, you know, 15 years ago. I'm 35 years old now. So I've been doing marketing for a really, really long time. It was just more so, you know, a little bit more quietly behind the scenes with the artists that the creativity was on the forefront. But behind the scenes, you know, the rappers were hitting me like, hey, can you help me out with this or that in terms of the marketing side of things. So I was playing an instrumental role on the marketing side of things. I was just never putting myself out there. And then as I really got older, you know, the music side of things, as far as being an artist with a, you know, being a producer and a, being a DJ, wasn't that exciting to me anymore. It was time to just, you know, evolve into the next chapter. And that's where, you know, I really wanted to focus on the marketing side of things. And with that, that really I feel like I really grew into what I wanted to do. And you know, I always tell this to people, is like, how I feel about marketing right now is how I felt when I was making beats when I was 18. You know, it's exciting to me. It's something fresh and exciting, and it keeps me waking up early every morning. And I just really love it. I really love the process of it. And you know, with making music, as far as producing, I kind of lost that in my later 20s. And that's really where the marketing side of things started to take a hold, because I was able to continue to grow into different things like that.
So when would you say would be like your confirmation moment? Like, you know, the monumental moments that you can say, you know, at this point, this person did this, and, you know, it really blew up to my, you know, I thought this would work. It did work, and that was my confirmation. And then you did it again with somebody. Like, can you give me a couple of stories? Because I know those are, I know there has to be some big ones in there.
It's, you know, to be honest, there wasn't like one big moment. It's just been kind of a process, like a really long process. You know, I think, you know, there was a weird period where I was in my 20s doing the, you know, all the music stuff. And then when I was about, I want to say I'm maybe like 28 or 29, I decided to actually get a day job. So I got a day job for a few years. And during that whole process, kind of, that was the period where things were really shifting for me from producing and DJing to marketing. And then I realized how much I hated the day job. And so that was really fueling the fire to really build the marketing side of things even more and more, to the point where, you know, I was able to leave that day job, luckily, and focus full time on the marketing. But I think just the biggest, you know, the biggest story, as far as, again, like, not the one thing that happened, you know, the one thing that happened overnight, but the process, was really just working with, you know, I work with so many amazing people on the daily basis, but I think Burner and Cookies is really one of the most amazing ones, because with Burner, the way like the whole story kind of unfolded was, you know, I used to DJ at this place in Santa Cruz called The Catalyst, and you know, I was producing, so any artist that would come through there, I would just have a beat CD. This is when beat CDs were a thing. So I'd just give them out to people. Excuse me. And Burner was just an artist performing there that, you know, I think he had just put out Drought Season 1, maybe. So I gave him a, you know, I gave him a beat CD, and we just basically became friends, because he would come to The Catalyst for shows, whether he was performing or not even performing, just coming through with the Bay Area rappers, and just built a relationship with them, became cool, and really just became friends, because we both just vibed together. And then ended up going on the road with him because he needed a tour DJ, and just slowly built that relationship. And, you know, then the beats, you know, I started giving him beats, more beats to get on projects. And then at that time, he was also launching Cookies. So I was kind of his right hand man with helping out with, again, like, I was a computer nerd homie, you know, so I was there to, you know, help set things up on the online world, and make sure things were running smoothly, and help with the marketing. And I think the, you know, just seeing from that point of helping him really start that to where it is now, you know, when we first started it, it was obviously based off the strain, but it was the clothing company that really came first. And so we started to build that, and then, you know, eventually turned into obviously the cannabis side of things. But, you know, just seeing the growth of that from such an organic level, and it's just been amazing to where it is now. You know, it was literally just us and his sorry, did I cut out?
No, you're good. It's good.
Oh, okay, sorry, there's another call coming in. To seeing it where it is now, to where it's you know, it's this monster machine now, it is amazing. And so, again, like, I work with so many amazing people, but being right there at ground zero in the very beginning to the where it is now is just dope to see. And I think one of the most important things that I really pride myself in is just relationships with people. And, you know, I always say that relationships can get you places money can't. And I think that's so, so important. And there's a reason why, you know, I still work with a lot of these people to this day that I've worked with for over 15 years, about like 15 years. Yeah, like 15 years now at this point. With a lot of people, is because I've never burned a bridge. I've always maintained that relationship, and I've just always been a solid person. And so it's just amazing to see those relationships grow and see those artists grow and those companies grow and be able to help them out in a very honest way. Because especially with marketing, there's a lot of scammers and dishonesty in that world. So it's just good to be a part of some really cool shit.
I mean, Nima, you're genuine. That right there is a trait that's missing. You know what I mean? When you have someone that's genuine, that's, you know, comes from it and that has no ulterior motive other than to get the job done and see where it's lacking and fill the void. I mean, bro, you know, I come from that. So I understand what you mean. So
yeah, I appreciate it.
That value is unprecedented. So it's just, they have to, like, man, you're the Mr. Make It Happen. You're the problem solver.
I appreciate it. Yeah, I mean, I think that's the biggest thing is, like, you just got to be a genuine person and not have any ulterior motives, because there's a lot of people out there that might want to do something because, you know, they got some other shit going on the side that they want to wiggle into, you know, into what this is, or utilize this to be able to piggyback onto their own shit. I've just never been a person that does anything like that.
No, and you know, you said it perfectly, the relationships. Once you build a relationship with somebody and you have some core values and understand that person, and then you actually want to have a genuine interest into what's going on, and that unravels a whole lot more. You know, you can talk to somebody that comes by, gets their car washed, and they have a fancy car, and you talk about that car, and you just build a relationship. Next thing you know, you could be a plumber and they have all these properties, and you know, now you got the plumbing job for 70 different apartment buildings because you just talked to the guy about his car.
Yeah, definitely. I think you know, knowing your values is very, very important. I think there's a lot of people that don't even think about that and knowing what their core values are. And I don't blame them. You know, if you're in your 20s, I didn't know that shit at all. It was just the way I was raised and the type of person I am. But as I got older and into my 30s, I started really understanding what my core values are, and taking some time to really think about that and understand that. And I think once you really understand your core values and define what those values are to you, you really start to, you know, I hate to use marketing terminology, but you start to optimize your life, you know, for those core values, you know, and you start to question certain things that you do. And hey, like, is this part of my values? Like, do I really believe in this? And, you know, there's so many times where, you know, I've almost done something. I'm like, wait a minute, I don't really believe in this. Like, this makes no sense to me. Like, why the fuck am I doing this? And I really got to credit my wife for that, because, you know, having a family is, you know, something that really instilled that in me, you know, with my wife and my kid. And I think that's really important when you become a parent, to understand what those core values are, individually and then as a family as well, because those values get passed down to your kid. And you know, showing your children that this is you know, hey, this is not right, or you know, this is the right way of doing things, I think is really, really important.
You know, I definitely want to give the time to give you your flowers, because all the guests that come on here that are dedicated fathers, I have to take my hat off to you, hand you your flowers, because you know that's such a core value to instill in your children. Because
thank you
come
man.
From something that where you could be extremely busy, but we still make the time, because I'm a father. I'm in the same boat as you, brother.
Yeah, yeah, for sure.
So you got to make time and have ways to communicate, and at the same time, give the love to your children. They spell love T-I-M-E, not M-O-N-E-Y. You know what I mean?
Yeah, exactly. I think a lot of people don't really realize that. Unfortunately, where they think that they can just buy things. And, you know, I think the best thing you can give your family is and your kids is really your time. And, you know, I think a lot of people are just so busy with just working all the time. And I think that's really important as well. But you have to make sure to have that work-life balance. And you know what works for me might not work for the next person. I know, you know, how I've balanced my life and how I continually try and balance my life. I feel like it's an ongoing process. But, you know, it's all about working smarter rather than harder, you know, because you don't want to be just spending 14 hours a day, 16 hours a day doing something that could be done, you know, in 8 hours because you weren't, you know, optimizing your time correctly. So, you know, and then taking on projects that don't that don't necessarily make sense just to be able to collect a check. You know, I think at this point, I'm 35 years old. Yeah, obviously, money is great, but it's not everything. And I think it's really hard to see that until you get older and into your 30s. And I think there's a lot of really important lessons that you learn as you're getting older that are part of your life, that once you start learning those lessons, those make it easier for you to be more productive in your work.
See, I'm 32 and it took me a while to understand that simple statement of less is more. And I'm like, oh, I gotta do more. I gotta be more involved. I gotta do this. I gotta do that. And then you realize that, you know, the more things that mean to you, they have less of your time. And so I'm like, well, I gotta flip that around and really make that make sense. And then it hit me in the face, like, oh, that's what it means. You gotta do less things because that makes you more important to the less things you're involved in.
Yeah, definitely. And I think, you know, it's hard to really see it when you're, you know, It's hard to see it until you get a little bit older. And then I had somebody tell me, you know, and explain it to me, like, look, man, like, what you're doing is not important compared to what's going on in your family. He put it in really simplistic terms. He said, what's going on in your family will never, ever be replaced and is the most important thing. But what you're doing can easily be replaced at any time. You can basically lose your entire business and career and build something back up, but you cannot do that with your family. And so when he told me that, and, you know, there was obviously a lot more, there's a lot longer dialogue that came along with it, but you know, he really put things into perspective. This is somebody that's 20 years older than me, that's been in the rap game, you know, that's been involved with you know, the what's going on in the streets and stuff. And so when he put it in that perspective, and the age that he is not so old where it's my dad, but he's just, you know, he's kind of in between, where it's a little bit more relatable, and he put it in a certain perspective that I understand. I think that was really, really important.
So let me ask you this, at what age did, like, you start investing in yourself, and at what time did, like, your family start helping you invest into what you wanted to do so that you could start reaching your potential and start seeing that you're, you know, what you feel like you're supposed to be doing is what you're doing?
So I've always been somebody that's invested in myself, you know, from day one. I've always taken basically anything I've made and put it back into what I've done. My family has... You know, my family has always supported me as far as anything I've wanted to do, you know, whether it was go to college or not go to college, or what I wanted to pursue, whether they agreed with it or not, they always still supported me. I wouldn't say financially they supported me as much, but more so just like, hey, if that's what you want to do, we're going to stand behind it. But really just, you know, I think one of the things that I was always taught from a very young age, like, no matter what you do, if you're going to drop out of college, drop out of college and go 100% in whatever it is you're doing because you're dropping out. Or if you're going to go to college, go to college and go 100%, like, don't half-ass it. And so that's something that, you know, from the moment I started getting involved with music, I would just basically take whatever I could, buy whatever equipment I could, take whatever I was making, put that back into buying more equipment, and just reinvesting in myself. And I mean, still to this day, I'm constantly putting money back into my business and seeing what other things we can do, whether it's, you know, investing in people, investing in tools, investing in developers, investing in, you know, other businesses, investing in marketing for my own business. You know, whatever it is, I'm always putting money back in and reinvesting back into myself.
Man, it's always nice to hear, like, all money in type of ordeal, just all the way across the board, and doing it all for the right reasons. Because, you know, you're having a legacy, and you know, it's pretty clear to the people if they haven't caught on. You know, you're going to leave this legacy for your children and, you know, for everyone else, that you have something to have and to hold. And it's beautiful, bruh. Like, stepping back and looking at the masterpiece, you went from making just canvases to now you're painting walls and murals.
I appreciate it. And I think that goes back to the values thing. It's like, one of my values is legacy. You know, so I think when you really start to define what those are, you can really fine tune everything that you do and how to achieve those, or not achieve, but how to really live by those values.
Yes, sir. Especially coming from someone that's done jewelry, you had to have real, real strong values.
So, I mean, with the jewelry thing, that was kind of an interesting thing, because You know, I was always in the streetwear, and you know, I wasn't big into jewelry, more so that I was in the streetwear. And so for me, it was always a thing where, you know, you were at the time, you know, you were buying jewelry that was either ridiculously expensive or some really cheap stuff that was like some knockoff stuff. And I was like, how has nobody made something that's in between, that doesn't cost a whole lot of money, but caters to the streetwear crowd, where they can just have some cool shit they want to wear, but it's not so cheap and janky to where, you know, it stains your neck green or anything like that, because it's so fake. And so, you know, after just researching and learning and going through so many different trials of, you know, manufacturing, you know, I finally found something that would work. And then the fun part really kicked in, which was the creative side of things and coming up with ideas like, hey, let's do this type of chain, or let's do, you know, this kind of pendant, and being able to do that and then release it. It was really more the creative side of things rather than the jewelry side of things, you know, if that makes any sense. And so for me, it wasn't about, that's why if you look at like even the pieces, which, you know, the business is now shut down, but you look back on it, I never did anything with diamonds or anything like that. It was always really a focus on just an idea that I had, and I wanted to put it on a chain and, you know, put it out there for other people to be able to buy it.
So let me ask you this. You are definitely a genius when it comes to like pretty much apparel, clothing line. I mean, just how to piece things together, like creatively genius. And so my question to you is, what type of clothing lines or apparel were you wearing like teenage growing up? Like, you know, what is some of the
I was a skater. So like, even though I love fashion, I never was the dude that wore like the really flashy stuff or really bright colors. Like when I say fashion, like I love white tees and jeans and, you know, some bands or like some, you know, white Air Force Ones, and like I'm, you know, in a flannel or like just a black jacket, you know. To me, that's still fashion. And so I've always just loved the simplicity of fashion when it comes to stuff like that. So even in high school, I was wearing, you know, the same thing I am now, Vans, white tee and jeans, you know, with like a flannel or a hoodie. And that's still to this day, like I still wear that type of fit. I've always, you know, worn that type of stuff. It was kind of interesting to see Vans coming back, because a lot of people that were like wearing Vans now, I'm like, you know, it's like kind of the new style, but it went out of style for a bit.
Bro, they and came back and raised their price. They doubled.
Yeah, they definitely came back and raised their price. But, you know, I grew up skateboarding and surfing and snowboarding, so I feel like that the culture of those things with fashion, and I was always really into hip hop, so kind of like blending those worlds together. So looking at like the Stevie Williams of skateboarding, who was like a pro skater but had a really you know, hip hop influenced style, or like you know, there's a lot of them out there that, you know, the JP Walker in the snowboard world, who was really hip hop influenced snowboarder. So you could tell he would take his t-shirt and wrap it around his head and have like the super baggy sagging pants with like no shirt snowboarding, you know, type of shit. So, you know, just looking at a lot of that stuff. And I think a lot of people don't look into, a lot of people don't really give credit to how impactful the skateboard culture, like the surf culture, like the snowboard culture is in just the bigger pop culture of the world. And a lot of those things did influence the way people are dressing now. So it's really cool to see.
Big time. Big time. Yeah. I mean, a lot of people look back and they think about Lil Wayne wearing those tight jeans and rapping, but, you know, he was embodying the skateboarding culture into the hip hop rap culture, because yeah, that's what he loved. You know what I mean? So it's evolved into what we have today.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely.
What the hell was I going to say? It's just so much, Brad, because, you know, it's so much culture, and it's like it's sophisticated at the same time, but it's simple, but it's also like complex. And it's so crazy, because all of those things are like what makes the monstra of what you put together in Vertical Agency and how you market. And so,
yeah, I think marketing for me is really it's a two-part thing. It's you know, you have to understand things from a cultural perspective, and then the other part of it, you have to understand the analytics and the, you know, the whole, you know, quote-unquote computer nerd side of things. So, you know, bringing those two worlds together is really important for us to be able to you know, have an understanding of what's going on in the different cultures that we work with, which is why we don't work with people that we don't understand what their culture is. Like, we don't work with real estate offices. We don't work with, you know, restaurants. We don't work with, you know, these different businesses and these different things where we don't understand the culture. We work in music and lifestyle. We work with music artists, music festivals, streetwear companies, cannabis companies, because we understand that culture. We speak that language. And then the analytics side is really just understanding the numbers and the technical side of things, being able to properly look at data and, you know, make smart decisions based on that data, collect that data, utilize that data to grow and scale and to really market a brand or a music artist or a music festival is really important. But if you don't have both of those things, I don't think you can really achieve proper marketing. And I think there's a lot of people out there that have one or the other, but they don't have both of them. And that kind of goes back to, like, I was just always a computer nerd homie, you know, and that the street dudes could talk to, you know. So I think that's a really, really important thing. That's really why I feel like a lot of people come to us, because we understand both of those worlds and really bring them together.
Yeah, those values alone speak volumes, because you was the homie that, you know, they'll come and ask you for help on their homework, but also, yeah, hey, we finna do this afterwards, you know, can you help us out with an alibi?
Yeah.
I got you.
Yeah.
And that shit just keeps on building, but, like, it goes back, it's relationships. You know, what people do is not, that doesn't put fear into you, it's what you build with people. You know what I mean?
Yeah, no, definitely. I think, relationships are very important, and just being an honest person, you know. I've always just been myself around people, and I think that's why a lot of people come to us to work with us, because they know I'm just keeping it real with them. I'm not trying to, you know, one up them or upsell them on anything. We're really there just to help people out.
No, that's the beautiful thing, genuineness. I mean, come on. So I have this segment. We're going to start transitioning out of history and going to a little bit of my awareness segment. You know, okay. I'm a father, you're a father. You know, there's a lot of people out there that don't tell their kids what to do in situations when the red and blue lights kick on, the high beam hits their neck, hits their back, and looks to see who else is in the car. You know, I'm talking about when they get blurped, they get pulled over. So, you know, I like to ask my guests, one, you know, when's the last time they were pulled over? And two, you know, some advice to some of the youngsters that don't have the big brother, the dad, the uncle, the big homie on the corner that's going to tell them the real. So, you know, I just try to ask, you know, the guests last time they were pulled over and some advice to give them to, you know, make it home.
Yeah, absolutely. I was pulled over maybe 3 weeks ago. speeding. I feel like, the first thing you should obviously do when you get pulled over is just roll all the windows down, turn your car off, put the keys in the cup holder, and put your hands on the dash. Like, that's my automatic process. Now, I'm Persian, you know, so I got brown skin, so I don't feel like, it's a tricky thing, because I think with cops, it's, I've never ran into any serious issues with the cops. And again, I'm not a street dude. So I think, I think E-40 said it best in, there was a Vice episode where he was like, you know what, like, not all cops are bad, but the bad ones out there, you know, there's bad ones out there. And I think, it's just really important to, just be aware of what's going on and make sure that, you know, this is a tricky one. This is definitely a tricky one. It's a really difficult one, because I feel like it's different for everybody. And unfortunately, it's really unfortunate that people have to have, you know, different situations with the cops. I would say just, like, roll the windows down, put the keys in the cup holder, and put your hands on the dash. Like, that's, like, so there's no immediate threat to the cops, because you never know who is, who's trigger happy, who's had a bad day. You know, they're working just like everybody else, and their job, unfortunately, is really it has a really high, you know, a high rate of, they have a really big responsibility, so you never know who can be triggered.
I just want to add in there, just, you know, you also want to ask for permission before you make any sudden movement. Because, you know, they are, if they have that, you know, that froggish feeling, they're going to leap to action. And so the best thing to do is always ask for permission. And it is such a touchy detail, but at the same time, I feel like knowledge is power. And when we use that knowledge, it's a superpower. And so, you know, you brought up very great key elements, you know, have the windows down, have the keys in the cup holder so they know, hey, I'm not going to go anywhere. My windows are down. I'm ready for whatever you're about to give me.
Yeah, and I think it's also just knowing your rights. I think knowing your rights is one of the most important things, and I think a lot of people don't know their rights. You know, and again, like I've never been, you know, I've never been in any situations where I've ran into some serious trouble with cops. So, you know, I'm probably not the best person to be giving advice on stuff like that. But I think just knowing your rights is one of the most important things.
Yes, sir. So I'm going to go ahead and get out of this serious talk and get into having some fun now. Because, you know, All my guests always love this next part, and especially all my people that watch the show. It's called Trading Places. It's, you know, that Dan Aykroyd, Eddie Murphy movie where you wake up and life's change. And, you know, today I got two very special guests that, you know, we're going to have them trade places. They're icons, especially on the West Coast. And question number one is, will it work? And question number two is, what would life be like if they traded places? You ready?
Yep.
I got Little B, the bass guy, trading places with Johnny Knoxville.
Oh, man. I don't think much will change.
Would it work?
I think it would. Yeah. I think it would. I think they're both, I think Lil B and Johnny Knoxville world will be super entertained. He's got a good energy. He would have a lot of fun. And then Knoxville and Lil B's world will, one exact same thing. He'd be fully entertained and he just got good energy and it would just be funny for him.
So do you think Johnny Knoxville would have kept the pack all together?
I think so.
I mean, he kept the whole unit together. He could, you know.
I think he would. I think he would.
Jackass. Now, what do you think Little B would name Jackass? Do you think it'd be something else, or do you think it'd still be Jackass?
I think he would figure out a way to do some sort of base God branding on it and make it and capitalize on that for sure.
Oh, man. And you know what? I really could see him doing Grandpa, but Little B would probably like really do some real, real like some culture stuff. You know what I'm saying? Not just the wild whip your ass, jump in the shopping cart, leave a kid on the thing. I think he would do like his grandma used to do and his grandpa used to do.
Yeah, no, definitely. I think he would too.
Man, for sure. Well, I like having that because one, it's different.
Yeah.
You know, no one's thinking like, what the hell happens if we trade these two people's lives? And sometimes it'd be like movie material sometimes.
Totally. I feel like they both just in general just got good energy and they just seem like they're both I feel like that one's like they're both really entertained and they're both really they're both just really happy people, it seems like. So they just would enjoy it, just the experience, I feel like.
Man, so I have this thing called Impulse Q&A. And so pretty much there's all these questions on these cards and I pull three random questions and they don't pay me to say their name. So I don't say their name, but they have good questions and they're great for fans. And so I added it in here.
Okay.
You ready? You get to pass. You got to answer three questions. So if you pass on one, I'll pull another one.
Okay, perfect.
What's the funniest thing you've seen a kid do?
Any kid?
Yeah, any kid.
I've seen my daughter, when she learned how to cuss, running around the house saying cuss words back to back to back nonstop at the top of her lungs for like 5 minutes straight. That was probably the funniest thing I've seen a kid do.
Oh, yeah. My son did the same exact thing, bro. Like, we were just playing videos last night. He had a little thing, and he pulled it back and fired it, and it hit top of my screen on my phone while I'm filming him. He pulls it off, does it again, and says, I fucking fired.
Yeah. Isn't it crazy how just because it's a little kid cussing it, that shit sounds hella funny?
It does, but then like after they say it so long, you start to yell, and then it sucks because when they film him cussing and he says a whole bunch of cuss words and then you decide to yell at him, it looks bad.
Yeah. Yeah, no, definitely. And that's why, like, with that stuff, I leave most of that stuff off my social media because I don't want my daughter to end up on World Star or nothing.
Real talk. Yeah. Bro, I don't post that stuff either, but I'll talk about it because my kid will bust in this room. It don't matter who I'm interviewing. And he will come in here, look at the thing, and then call me a name. He'll call me a button face or a bucket head, and then walk about the room like, come on. And it's just, you know, they want their dad's attention. And so but because he realized I'm in front of the lights, I'm gonna make something stick on this episode. Yeah. I'm like, bro, you're six. Calm down. Question number two. What is something that people are obsessed with, but you just don't get the point of?
Oh, man. How many things can I say?
Go ahead, brother.
I got to be careful with this because I don't want to piss any of my friends off. Expensive cars. Designer shit. As far as like Louis Vuitton, Gucci, all that stuff. I think that's it. I don't want to piss too many of my friends off by saying other things, but I just feel like people like buying shiny things. And you know what? If that's what makes you happy, then that's great. But I think that majority of people that are buying stuff like that are really just doing it to show everybody else, like, hey, look at me, I got this cool shiny thing over here. And I think they think it makes them happy when it really doesn't. That's just my opinion.
You know what I mean? I would get it like if they had like a special skin disease, so they have to wear this special leather from Louis Vuitton or Gucci, like that fabric is the only fabric they could wear. But the reality is 98% of the world doesn't have that problem.
Yeah, that's true.
Question number three. That's a good one. What makes you feel old?
Oh, man. I would have to say going to a rap show. That makes me feel old because I see all these kids. I'm like, damn, I remember when I was like 15, 16 right there. I was like, damn, man. Look at these kids. Like, they're old. I'm like so old, you know? And I think I think the culture too, sometimes, you know, when I see, how much it's changed from when I was a kid, you know, that definitely makes me feel old, but I don't necessarily think feeling old is a bad thing. I think feeling old is, you know, just feeling your age. You know, I'm 35 years old and I'm supposed to feel like I'm 35. I'm supposed to look like I'm 35. You know, I'm not supposed to be out here doing wild dumb shit with these kids, you know, running wild. I already did all that when I was younger, you know. So I think just rap shows and culture sometimes makes me feel old because I'm like feeling like I'm getting up there.
No, you're right. Like, I go to certain things with my wife just because, you know, the way my job's set up, I'm an A&R and I work for Marvin Gaye III. I'm his assistant. And, you know, I'm always trying to like find newer, what the 15 to 19 ages crowd is doing and bring it back and, you know, to set up music and across the board. And so I'm always at these events and I'm like, man, I feel fucking old as shit when these kids run me over.
Oh yeah. When you start getting to the rap shows, that definitely makes me feel old, man.
Bro, going back and forth from like from stage to stage, that shit alone, like, I'm not built for this. Why did I do this for 20 minutes of a separation? Like,
yeah, definitely.
No, you brought up a good thing. You made me think about it. Like, man, I ain't never like, I think about it, but I've never actually publicly said it. So you know what? I'm gonna have to agree with you because I be feeling old as shit after these events.
Yeah, sometimes Instagram too. Yeah, no, definitely. And like when you go on Instagram too, you see like all these young kids, and I always think about like, damn, man, what would it be like if I was 20 years old on Instagram right now? Or what would it be like if I was like 18 years old on Instagram? It'd be a whole different world.
Right. So let me ask you this. What are you most excited for coming up? Because as we talked about Instagram, I just feel like it was the platform to talk about what's coming up.
Most excited about as far as like platforms or just in general?
The things you're a part of.
I think I'm just excited to continue to grow my business and work with amazing people and take care of my family and just spend time with my family. I think those are the things that I'm most excited about. like really just grow. It's really just the process, you know, like I mentioned earlier, the process and the journey is what really excites me more. And that can apply to anything, whether it's growing your business, growing as a person, growing with your family, whatever that may be, you know, the journey and the process is what really excites me.
And you know, something else I've realized throughout this whole interview, you're hungry and you're humble. And you know, you match that same energy as the people you're working with, the artists that are going 100 miles an hour trying to get this music out, trying to gain fans. You're also going 100 miles an hour trying to match that energy, along with these clothing, the streetwear. Like, I take my hat off to you, brother, because you definitely just don't talk about it, you be about it, and it definitely shows.
Thank you, man. I really appreciate that. And I think that really just goes back to the values thing again, also, is like, just those are certain values that I have, and that I really stick by them, and I really I stand by them, and that's just part of who I am.
So let me just get this out there real fast before we get to closing out. What's some values that you feel that, you know, people that are from that 15 to 19 crowd should start really developing, that, you know, we could at least say you heard it here before you got lost in the sauce of being a 20 to 30, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, I think honesty. I think, I mean, I know what I have, but I'm trying to think of things that would make sense for somebody at that age. You know, I think legacy would be important to start at that age. It's obviously very young, but really start thinking about that. I think karma is really, really important. I think, kindness. I think, you know, I think your energy, how you present yourself, how you're putting yourself out there, I think is really, really important. The energy that you present, you know, there's a lot that I think that's really, really important, but it's really hard to understand that when you're younger. But as you get older, you experience people more, I think your energy becomes something that you become a little bit more aware about. But yeah, I would say those things.
Absolutely. No, thank you, brother. Now, this is what I do at the end of the show. If you notice, the show is somewhat of the same of what you're used to seeing, but it's done a little bit differently. I like being unique. I like trying to have different angles to get some great things out of people and staying away from the cliche stories. So I flip it on my guests and I say, do you got any questions for me?
I didn't expect that. What's your favorite part of the podcast?
I'm a sucker for the success stories, because, you know, to be very honest, like that's my thing. Like, I was born like successful, and, you know, coming from a successful family, my dad, but my father passed away when I was 4, and so we grew up 4 from that point on. My mom didn't really have it like that, so like it was always in me but not on me, and it took a long time to get to certain things on me. And so, you know, I take that level of gratitude and I built myself so that I have all these stories, but at the same time I realize those core values are the same thing that, you know, transfers in the heat of success. And so I want those stories, the confirmation moments, those monuments, because those are moments where kids that are in a cul-de-sac, they think that their world ends on this block and doesn't realize you can build a bridge over it and get over it. And so, like, that's where this show and this platform, and why I love the success stories. And then I had to do other things so that, you know, it's more interesting and different. And the platform, you know, the biggest thing is the platform.
Definitely. That's dope, man. I've always found inspiration in other people's stories, too. I think when I read books or listen to podcasts, I get the most inspiration by hearing other people's success stories.
Well, yeah, no, I appreciate you. It's episode 35, and you definitely have left a imprint on my show, because, one, you know, you put some things on there that no one has ever had a chance to say, because they're not marketing gurus like yourself.
I appreciate it, man. Thank you so much for having me. Thank you for just everything. Thank you for the kind words. Thank you for the praise. I really, really appreciate it.
Oh, it's all love, brother. You gotta start spending more time telling people what's real versus telling people what they feel that they should say. You know what I'm saying?
Definitely, definitely.
So, man, it's Contrast Uncut, Season 2, Episode 35. I've had the pleasure of rocking with Nima Fadavi, giving these amazing stories, these marketing guru gems. I mean, he was just making it rain. You know, he ain't putting no diamonds in the jewelry, but he put diamonds in this conversation and let them dance. So, you know, I appreciate you, brother. And I got to give a special shout out to my sponsors, to Bobby D Presents and Uncle Snoop's Army, because none of this would be possible. But Nima, brother, I appreciate you, man. Wow.
Thank you, man. Thank you for having me. Shout out to Contrast Uncut. I appreciate you guys for having me.
Yes, sir.
Yo, what up? It's Nima Fadavi. I'm live and direct right here on Contrast Uncut. Tune in.
Hey.